Hello, John.
You made me a fan. Oh, my God. I've never heard so much about me.
Well, it's great. We like to research the people that we bring on, our guests, and you have a lot of interesting things about you in your life, and we're happy to have you on the show, John. We've been trying to get you for a long time. We'd like to thank Mike, your representative, who helped us arrange the interview. So welcome to Sauna Talk Radio. And Cheryl, did you make sure that everybody who calls in later in the show turns down their radios, their TVs, any background noise that we will pick up during showtime?
Everyone that I've talked to so far online that's lined up ready to ask questions after our little mini interview, and I'll tweet it again in just a sec.
Okay, and John, we just wanted to let you know that Cheryl and I have both met you before several times. Cheryl met you at the Paley Center and Comic-Con, and I met you at the Castle Set a couple of times. I know you can't remember everybody that comes through the doors there, but you were very nice to me, and I want to just thank you again for being so kind when I was visiting Castle Season 2 and 3 finale. So our first questions that we want to ask you tonight are to do with a charity that you're involved with that's close to your heart called Puppies Behind Bars.
Puppies Behind Bars. I'm on the board of directors, and I've been a part of that for almost 3 years now.
And how did you become involved with Puppies Behind Bars, PBB?
Well, you know, I'm not the type of guy who, because I'm on television or whatever, that I like to just, you know, go to every charity event just to be seen. You know, if I'm going to work with a charity, if I want to be involved with charities, I want to actually be involved with the charity. I'm not into the whole figurehead thing. I like being involved. So, I didn't really work with any charities until I found the one that spoke to me and that I thought was a good fit. And I really did a lot of research. And I found Puppies Behind Bars by chance. And because I'm an animal lover, and I've always been a proponent of that animals have an amazing healing power, and then of course me being a veteran and wanting to also work, in some capacity to help some of the wounded veterans that are coming back from the Iraqi war and the Afghani war. This charity really spoke to me, really met both criteria of me being an animal lover and an advocate for animal healing and also helping vets, because these dogs, these service animals, they really help vets, who return with PTSD or traumatic brain injury or physical injuries. They really help them, function in society where they aren't able to, like they did before they left to go to combat.
Right. Well, I know that after I do your interview, I'm going to read a bit about PBB for our listeners. We reach 40,000 listeners worldwide. And right now, some people in international are listening to you at 2 and 3 and 4 in the morning. They're live listening. And we'll let them know how they can help PBB and donate and be a volunteer. They're mainly out of New York, correct? That the prisons they work with are in New York area.
New York and New Jersey. The charity's based in New York, right in Manhattan. And the prisons are upstate New York and New Jersey. That's where our inmates are. That some of the best dog trainers in the world are in these are inmates in these prisons. And I've seen them train these animals. I've seen the animals. And I don't wish I was a wounded veteran, but I wish I had one of these dogs. They're just amazing. They can do things that people can't do.
Well, I know that they helped with Guiding Eyes for the Blind outside of New York, and they got together, and the dogs that do not make it through the program do go to Guiding Eyes for the Blind if they don't make the rigorous program for PBB, and then they go into volunteer programs to go around to the senior citizens. So what is your duties as a member of the board? What do you actually do?
I have to clean up all the poop after all the dogs. That's an important job. We can't have
dogs you, John.
Walking around in poo. I'm kidding. My job is to help definitely raise awareness of the program, for the program. We have board meetings where we actually, we vote on very, really important issues. a lot of it has to do with fundraising. How are we going to raise funds to keep the charity moving? It's a really expensive charity. I mean, dogs, each one of the dogs is worth thousands and thousands of dollars. Thousands and thousands of dollars worth of training goes.
150,000.
Animal. Exactly. 150,000.
Yeah, 150,000. It says on this board here.
And that's, you know, that's a lot of money when you consider how many dogs we train and provide to veterans. So you've got to only be active in our fundraising. So that's something that we vote on other issues where we're going to, you know, when we do have money, we want to invest that money so that our money keeps making money so that, you know, during the downturn of the economy, you know, contributions became much less because, you know, people are just hurting and they can't necessarily contribute as what they'd like to. So, you know, that raising awareness so that other people can donate, also raising awareness to veterans. A lot of veterans don't necessarily know about these programs. They don't even know that this type of program is available to them. You know, so we got to raise awareness to wounded veterans and to the military bases where they're currently serving, currently in therapy or that's my job.
Now, do you do it by conference call? Do you fly to New York a couple of times a year? Have you visited the men's and women's prisons that participate in the program? Because I know they do it both for men's and women's prisons there. Have you saw them, you know, gone there and watched them work with the dogs, like on the video that's on the website?
I'll pick E. E for all of the above. I do all of that. I fly out there. It's usually during the hiatus or if I have some time off or if it's a really important thing. Like we have these amazing cocktail fundraisers, cocktail parties. We have celebrities that are also championing the program, like Glenn Close and James Gandolfini come out to these cocktail parties and they bring their friends, maybe, you know, people that they know, and it helps more people come and we get great contributions from that. So I'll fly out there for definitely things like that. I'll actually ask for time off from Castle if they can allow my schedule to be, you know, switched around. But, you know, with Castle filming, I only get 2 months off a year. So for the other 10 months, I'm basically kind of locked into L.A. It's kind of hard to just fly back for a day to New York. And a lot of our board meetings are during the week. You know, it's not like a weekend thing necessarily. But I've definitely gone to the prisons and I've witnessed the training program. I've witnessed, you know, the inmates working with the wounded veterans and the relationship that is cultivated there between the animal, the inmate, and the veteran. And just I watched the inmate, you know, present this dog to this veteran. And you know, the inmates lived with this animal for 18 months. It's such a touching moment, you know, to see this, you know, like, you know, somewhat hardened criminal, or was a hardened criminal who's now definitely, you know, reformed, give up an animal that he's grown to love, and that animal's grown to love him. To, you know, out of love, he's given it to another human being, another man who really needs this, or woman who needs this animal. It's just, it's one of the most touching moments. So, I've definitely been out there to see, and I want to see that as often as I can, because that's the most gratifying part of being in this program.
Well, I do know that they have to go through rigorous training themselves to be able to have a puppy. They have to prove themselves.
True.
They have to be doing well in the prison that they're in. They can't, and they have to be dedicated to the puppies. And they have to make sure that they won't hurt the puppies in any way, and they become very bonded with the puppies. It's very interesting. If any of our listeners want to hear more, you can go to puppiesbehindbars.com. And also, if you want to do anything to help with our military, you can go to woundedwarriors.com as well. And so, John, do you have any puppies? Do you have any pets?
I have two dogs, two Basenjis. They've one's been with me for 17 years, and one's been with me for 15 years. They're old dogs, but they're still pretty spry. They're cool. They're my my two little companions. One of them, you know, when I got out of the military, I had one of the dogs already, so she drove across country with me to L.A. She was my partner, and so she's still with me. She's not giving up on me yet.
That's
so
great.
My dog.
Yeah, I have a 15-and-a-half-year-old chow, so when they get up there, it's very precious all the time you get to spend with them.
Yeah.
Now, what would you like all the listeners to know about PBB before we move on to questions about Castle and your acting career? What would you like to sum it up to tell everybody why you're so passionate about it? Just any last closing words about the charity?
Well, if you look at this, if you look at a charity like Puppies Behind Bars, it's a charity where, you know, it's definitely about the dog, the animal, but what I want people to know is that, you know, the program is rehabilitating dogs, or not rehabilitating dogs, rehabilitating, using the dog to rehabilitate the inmate as well as the veteran. The inmate has a dog from about 6 to 8 weeks, so the dog is 18 months. So that's a year and a half of giving and receiving love. The inmate might have gotten into prison because, you know, the childhood that they had growing up or even their young adult life, they didn't know how to get love. They didn't know how to receive love. They didn't know how to give love. So now this program teaches them that if they didn't have it before. It also teaches them patience. It teaches them, because, you know, a lot of guys end up in prison because they just don't have any patience. And then they, you know, they take the shortcut. They take the easy way. So it teaches them patience, and it really gives them a purpose in life. It gives them, they feel like, you know, the way that they got into prison is that they took away from society. Now they're giving back to society because they're training animals that are, you know, being given to, you know, men who sacrifice, you know, their lives. Anybody who joins the military is sacrificing their life. Your life is in danger as soon as you get into the military. You know, they've sacrificed their lives. So these guys are giving them these animals so that they can, you know, reacclimate back into society. And you know, I talk to these inmates, and you know, they tell me how wonderful this program is for them. And then they actually have a skill that not a lot of people go after anyway. Being some of the most highly trained animal trainers in the world, they can go out and they can teach other dogs not only how to be service dogs, but bomb detection canines. We also provide bomb detection canines to law enforcement. So that's another thing. You know, these inmates are giving back to the same people who put them in prison, the law enforcement.
And they can also train dogs outside, you know, at puppy classes and all sorts of stuff. When they get out of prison, they can get a job in that occupation.
Yeah, exactly. And imagine having that on your resume, or your
yeah.
You know, you've trained animals for the FBI for bomb detection. You've trained animals for wounded veterans. You know, you can teach an animal how to go open a door. You can teach an animal how to go get you a glass out of the cupboard. Not a lot of animal trainers can really say they can do that. And then once the dog is you know, with his veteran, it does everything from, you know, watches his six, which means, like, you know, if you look at a clock, six is at the bottom, six is if you're facing the 12, six is behind you. So watching your six is always watching behind you. The dog's always got your back. They also, you know, they go into a room first and make sure the room is safe. That's what a lot of veterans need, you know. And once you're in combat, you get, you know, oversensitized to your surroundings, and, you know, that's what makes it hard for them to deal with public places and crowds, and going shopping, so you take the dog with you and you feel more comfortable. So, you know, it just shows you that our program benefits, you know, twofold. And that's what I want people to know and realize. It benefits twofold.
Yes, it does. It benefits
yeah.
the blind as well as the wounded warriors, and as well as society itself, for it helps the prisoners find something to care about for again, you know, because they...
Mm-hmm.
They're in there, and it gives them somebody to care about and to feel love for. So it's great that you're involved in that. We thank you for doing that. It's very interesting because I'm a lover of animals, so that would be a fun, well, not a fun place to visit, but a very interesting place to visit. And they do allow people to go through there at rare times to see how they're training the dogs, and you can go to those meetings and watch how they've gone from the first month to the 18th month. So that's really neat. So now we'll move on to Castle. Of course, your job on Castle for the last 3 years. And I wanted to ask you, how did you pursue the job of Castle? I mean, how did you pursue the role? Did it come to you, or did you go to the role of Castle? Did you pursue it?
Well, I mean, I had actually just gotten back. I'd only been back for a couple of months from working on Generation Kill, and we filmed that in Africa. When I got back, you know, it was kind of right in the middle of the writer's strike. And there wasn't a lot going on as far as television goes or anything. I mean, it was a writer's strike. Nobody was supposed to be writing anything. And it's, you know, SAG, Screen Actors Guild, and the Writers Guild, you know, were supposed to be standing together in a strike. So there wasn't a lot going on. As soon as the writer's strike was over, though, the floodgates opened, and I got the script, Castle. And sorry, I just almost, I'm driving and almost ran over a little kid that didn't want to look both ways before he crossed the street. God's sake. Anyway, I got the script cast and I was like, you know, my manager was like, you know, that's this really cool procedural. And I'm like, man, how many procedurals are there on TV? Do we really need another one? She's like, just read it. So I read it, you know, and it was unlike any other procedural I had watched as of yet on television. And it was so much, there was so much humor in it that I was just taken with it. From the start, and then Esposito was this amazingly blank slate, and when I went in and met with everybody, and you know, we just talked about the role, and we talked about, you know, I read some scenes from the script, we talked about the role, and they were just like, you know what would you want to do with the character? Nobody ever says that to an actor, really, especially in television. They tell you, this is what the character is, so this is what you're going to do, just do it. They were like, what do you want to do with it? So as soon as they said something like that to me, as an actor, you're like, wow, I would love to be able to help you paint this canvas. So, I thought the meeting was kind of bad, really. At first, when I went in, I actually called my manager, and I said, hey, you know what, call them and apologize to them, because I think I wasted their time, because I thought maybe I said some things that didn't make sense to them. She told me, we talked, she said, that she, my manager said that she called them, and I said, what'd they say? And she said, they love you, they want you to work on the show. I'm like, really?
Wow.
So basically what I've been doing for the last 3 years is going in and messing up. So I guess that's what they like. They like when I mess up.
Well, we're glad you messed up, John.
Thanks.
We're glad you messed up really bad.
Exactly.
Well, and I have for wasting their time. I'm still apologizing.
Well, to downshift a little bit, as you know, this is Stana Talk Radio, and we do Stanacatic news and everything. How would you describe Stana as an actress, as a person?
She's tall.
Now you sound like Castle.
She has pretty feet. As an actress, I think she does have pretty feet. As an actress, I think Stana is very thorough, very very dedicated to her character as Beckett, which I love, because you know, a lot of actors that get onto a television show, they just kind of walk through it. They don't really they don't put a lot, you know, they don't put everything they can into the role when you get on. In a television series sometimes, you just get kind of comfortable and lackadaisical. Stana, every script, every moment, she wants it to be important for Beckett and for anybody in the scene with Beckett. She strives and fights hard to make sure that, like, the relationship between my character, Javier, and Beckett is deeper than what's scripted. We both do. We both, you know, we both love that. We both want our, you know, our relationship as Beckett and Esposito to be a little deeper than so far what the writers have given us. So and she wants to do that with every character. So that comes onto the show, whether they're a guest star or a series regular. She's just she's very dedicated to her craft, which I like, which I love, because I feel like I try to be dedicated to my craft as well.
Well, we've seen several pictures of you clowning on the set with Stana. Who comes up with these collaborations? Are the culprits? Are you the main culprit, or is Stana?
I can neither confirm nor deny where you're at.
You plead the fifth.
What are you referring to?
Well, there's a picture of you guys doing the reenactment of Liz Taylor and James Dean from, I think, Giant. And then one where you're carrying her out of a burning building when the castle set got on fire one day. It was something sparked off, and you carried her out of the set, you know, you're like her hero, her fireman.
That was not antics. That was a fire. I was saving my co-star's life.
My hero.
The one, the James Dean, the James Dean Elizabeth Taylor one, actually, I think that came from Twitter.
Yes, she tweeted it, and you guys did it.
No, I believe someone on Twitter
tweeted
asked us to do that.
No.
They tweeted us that photo. I think they tweeted that photo and said it was a cool photo. I saw it. I liked the photo.
You and tweeted it to Donna.
Maybe I said, Donna, you want to do this.
Well,
I think that's what I did.
We
and then, the fire ones, you know.
The fireman?
I was saving her life. Yeah, I don't.
You were saving her life. Forget everybody else. Just get Donna out of the building.
Just get Donna, yeah. They didn't, you know. I'm glad the mouth-to-mouth resuscitation picture didn't
work. It worked wonders, didn't it?
Well, Pam, Anne from Ontario, I can't pronounce the name of her city. I think it's Mississauga. Anyway, I can't say it right.
Mississauga.
Thank you. She
a
said,
relative there.
We know, John, you get into laughing fits and you can't say your lines. What was the longest it took for a take to take place?
Oh, you know, I don't really know. Those moments, you know, they come and go.
It's hard to remember on the spot.
I don't think we really do more than about, for each setup, we won't do more than about 4 or 5 takes. We usually get it within 4 or 5 takes. But, you know, a lot of times what happens is one person starts laughing, and then, you know, that person has a laughing spell, and then the next person is laughing because that other person was laughing. And I think Stana's actually more guilty of not laughing and not being able to hold together more than anyone. Yeah, she. And then I think a close second is Nathan. When Nathan really gets into a laughing fit, it's hard for him to stop. You know, I don't really find anything funny. I just, you know, I laugh for their benefit. I laugh.
Well, John,
I'm the serious actor on the show. I'm
the serious
actor
one,
on the show.
Not
well,
Seamus, huh? on Twitter, Stana's name for you is the Latin Lover. Do you have a nickname for Stana?
Mine is a little dirtier than hers.
Uh oh. Beep. Beep. Okay, we won't elaborate. You don't want to elaborate, then I take it.
No, I'll tell you, I call her my swan song.
Aww.
Aww, that's sweet.
Now, back in March, John, we interviewed somebody that you had a big crush on when you were a little boy. And she came on your show, and you got to do a scene with her. Jane Seymour was on our show, and we told her that you had a crush on her. And her reply was, "He is very handsome and sweet. I did not want to leave the castle set."
Do you have a number?
I do have her number. I really do. But she said she had so much fun, she didn't want to leave, and everybody was trying to find things for her to do. So what was that like, working with somebody that you admired and had a crush on growing up?
Jane Seymour. You know, it was amazing. Anytime we get a guest star that, first of all, is a wonderful actor, which, you know, I always respect. I respect any actor who's had any sort of success. I mean, that's just one of the hardest things to do ever, is have any success at all as an actor. So that's always amazing. It's always amazing to have someone like Jane Seymour who, yes, I definitely, I don't want to say fantasized about her when I was little, but I did have, you know.
Why not?
I did love me some Jane Seymour growing up. And I still love Jane Seymour. That's the thing. Like, she's still amazingly beautiful. So it was amazing to be locked in an elevator with her.
So you didn't want out. Okay. Well, that's good. And you didn't mind taking the take after take there, right?
I messed up my line on purpose.
So she could stay longer. If you could change anything about your character, if you could, would you?
If I could change anything about Esposito, would I?
Or would you? Yeah.
No, I wouldn't.
Great.
I wouldn't change anything about Esposito. I think he's right where I want him. I got him right where I want him.
What would you add to your character, if you could? Anything?
More love scenes with Lainey.
Do you think way back at the Paley Center, when all the fans had a huge reaction to you guys, as far as that whole relationship in Do you think that kind of played into the storyline?
Hey, hold on 1 second. A seagull just landed on top of my car. He's trying to poop on me.
Going to poop on your car. See, John, you won't only have to pick up puppy poo. Now you got to do seagull poo.
I should have never brought up the poop thing. Now
you're jinxed. Taboo.
I was like sitting here. I got my sunroof like kind of open, and a seagull just attacked me.
So I take it you're at the beach, John. You get ready to exercise and run along the beach?
No, I'm actually right near USC, near downtown L.A. I have a recording studio down here. I'm going to record some music after this, and I'm sitting here and just talking to you guys while I'm, you know, waiting, and the seagull attacked me. Alfred Hitchcock is around here somewhere.
He's a long way from the ocean.
I don't know.
So back to my question, do you
first
think...
you've got
to
get the poo off his car.
Oh, okay. Well,
you know, scratch your paint job.
I got it out of here before it could get me.
Good, good.
Thank you for standing by. Thank you for standing by.
Well, you were adorable.
Police emergency. That's a 10-4.
The reason why I brought up the question about Paley Center was we loved all you guys at Paley Center, and we hope you get to go back again soon. By the way, are you guys going to go? I'm going to go to Comic-Con again this year. Are you guys going to be at Comic-Con?
We've heard the rumor that we are supposed to go back to Comic-Con. I know it's while we're working, so it's always, I think it's kind of tough for them to make sure that we could get down there for a panel on Saturday, because we work on Fridays a lot of times. So, I think it's just to make sure that we can time it right to get down to the panel. I think they usually wait a little to the last minute. But
I
talked to Andrew Arlo last week, and he seems to think we're going to Comic-Con
get down
again.
There.
Well, I'll try to get in line and be one of the people to ask a question of you. Okay.
If you get in line, and you don't ask me a question first, I'm going to be very, very upset.
See, there you go, Cheryl. You better ask John a question, and it better be a really good one.
Okay, off
you
the
can
record.
Ask me, you can ask me a question about Stana, since you're a huge Stana fan.
Okay.
But you got to ask me the question. You got to ask me the question first about Stana. Let's do
We're
something
fans
to make
of everybody, John. We like all of you, not just Stana. We're for all of you,
know,
for your careers. So she can ask you a really hot question about you and Lainey.
She can do that.
Which reminds me, if you were writing Esposito's backstory, and you are a writer, a director, and a producer, what would you want your backstory to be if you could write it instead of, say, Andrew Marlowe or one of the writers like Will and Elizabeth?
Well, I mean, that's what's so interesting about the show, and what attracted me to the show from the beginning with the whole blank canvas thing, is that, you know, Andrew Marlowe is probably my favorite showrunner in the world, because he actually allowed me to help him create Esposito's backstory. So a lot of what Esposito's backstory is stuff that I wanted him to have. We sit down, we have discussions with him, with the writers, at the beginning of every season, before we started the show, when we were doing the pilot, we would talk. As a matter of fact, I'm supposed to go in and talk to the writers this week. They're back now.
Right.
But we fill their heads up with ideas, and they take what they like, and they put it into the backstory. And all the ideas that I've had for Esposito have made it in, which I'm so grateful to Andrew and the writers for. And I think that's what makes our show so amazing, and so, you know, maybe even so attractive to the audience, because we're allowed to, you know, our chemistry comes across on screen because of the chemistry we not only have with the other actors, but the chemistry we have with the writers. I mean, we're all just so happy, for the most part, to be at work and to be doing what we're doing and to be working on these scripts, because these writers do allow us to sprinkle our own ideas into our characters.
Well, what do you think will happen with Lainey and Esposito? What would you like to see happen in season 4 and beyond with the two?
Well, I think what's going to happen with Lainey and Esposito is going to be we're going to practice making babies a lot, and. I'm not sure what's going to happen with Lainey and Esposito. I think that their relationship is still so new that it's probably going to have to be explored even further, even deeper. We'll see. But, you know, since I haven't gone in and talked to the writers yet, I still don't know. I haven't given them any ideas, and they haven't given me any ideas. So I just know that I'll be, you know, I'll be pushing for a lot more skin on skin scenes. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean.
I'm just saying that Pamela Jones has some soft. Yeah, she's got some of the softest skin I've ever touched. I mean, it's amazing skin.
We'll be asking her what she thinks of you. She's coming on in a few weeks to talk about you. How would you describe Esposito and Ryan's relationship with Beckett? Is it like a boss, sister, friend?
Esposito, you mean? I think with it's more like a sister. I think our relationship with her, she's kind of like that that bossy sister who tries to boss her like younger brothers around, but she's the one who's always getting into trouble, and the younger brothers have to always get her out of trouble. You know.
Now, do you think Esposito is a casket chipper or no?
I think partially yes. I mean, I think Esposito, what he really wants between those two, he wants them to just get it over with, just like just get dirty one time and see what happens, see what it feels like. If it feels right, go with it. If it feels wrong, try it maybe one or two more times and then see what happens.
Well,
I think that's Esposito's not looking at it like as in the long haul.
Term,
he's just kind
right.
of looking at it like. I think Esposito's a little more spontaneous than those two are.
So he's saying, get it on and then see what happens.
Yeah, he's not into the whole muse thing, like, you know, like, muse, schmooze. He's not into the whole, like, is this guy or this girl the right one for me? Nah, man, just do it.
Well, who do you think Who do you think made the first move in the Esplaney relationship? Did Esposito make the first move against Lainey, or did Lainey come after him?
Oh, that was Lainey all the way.
You think so, huh?
Oh, yeah. My backstory is this. Esposito went to the morgue. He just needed to gather a little information. He's just trying to you know, get some ballistics or something like that, see what kind of round head impaled this person's chest, and whilst in there, I think that Lainey ambushed him. She told him. I think she said, "I've seen the way you've been looking at me."
Oh yeah.
I think she got him into a wrist lock, spun him around, took his handcuffs from him, cuffed him.
Oh, you're funny.
Cuffed him to the table.
Scalpel, cut his belt. She cut his belt off with a scalpel. Just bam.
We'll have to ask Pamela.
Oh my God, she went crazy on Esposito. Esposito, I mean, I think Esposito almost filed a report.
Locked him in that morgue, wouldn't let him out.
Yeah, but he thought about it and he figured out he liked it.
Well, what do you think, since the season finale, when you guys filmed the finale, what do you think your characters, Ryan and your character, think about the captain's betrayal? You guys got in a fight in the alley over the captain. What do you think the characters are going to come back in season four? I know you haven't met with the writers yet, but what do you think, as John, your characters are going to be like next season, because the captain is supposedly dead, we all think, and are they going to want revenge, or are they going to try to protect Beckett even more as their brothers?
What I'm going to definitely lobby for is the revenge card. You know, the captain gave, at one point, he gave Ryan Esposito, he gave them license to go and try to, you know, to kill this guy. So I think that they still have that license in their pocket. I think they're still holding on to that. So if they get an opportunity to kill the person who, you know, is responsible for not only causing our captain to betray everything we were investigating on behalf of Beckett's mother's murder, but also responsible for the captain's death, and also responsible for shooting Beckett in the chest and possibly killing her. And, you know, one of those rounds got really close to Lainey's head, man. So I think Esposito's out for blood.
Yeah, he was pushing Lady down. He pushed her on the ground.
Yeah. And I think Ryan is going to be right there beside him. You know, I think that the two of us are going to be out for blood. I'd like us to be out for blood because that's a nice emotional place that neither one of our characters have really gone to so much. I think I did in one episode, but not so much from Ryan. I'd like to see that from Ryan. I'd like to be his partner on that. And, you know, we've seen Beckett out for blood, so I'd like to see Ryan Esposito out for blood.
Hey, John, do you like to do your own stunts? I mean, do they let you do stunts?
They for the most part, let me do my own stunts. I do like to do my own stunts. I'm a very physical, athletic type of person, so I push for doing my own stunts all the time as much as I can. I do all my own stunts. If it involves me landing on my back on the concrete,
no.
That's when my boy, my stunt double comes in and takes the hit for me. That's the one thing that's just really dangerous, because you can crack your head. And there's a lot of we shoot mostly on concrete, so you crack your head, then I'm not ready for the next scene. It'll take me a day or two to recover from a nice concussion or something. But I'll pretty much do everything. I've done a lot of the driving stunts. I think I've done all the driving stunts.
When they ever get in a car.
Yeah.
We're in the car a lot
the first season. We're in the car a lot the first season, actually.
I know when we were setting up this interview, you had an unexpected movie, and you went down to Georgia. Can you say anything about the movie you just filmed and your character, anything, or is that still, real quiet right now?
It's still pretty quiet. I mean, I'm not supposed to talk about it too much. We actually went to Louisiana and shot it.
Oh, okay.
But what I can say is that I play a villain in this one. I don't play a good guy. Yeah, it's a lot of fun to play a villain. It's like no holds barred. You can do. I mean, I already thought that playing Esposito and being on Castle was pretty much no holds barred. We get to do a lot off the cuff and off the script. But being a villain, man, they just let you go sometimes. It's pretty amazing. I got to shoot at a lot of people.
Did you film it in, what part of Louisiana, like New Orleans or at a plantation somewhere? Or?
No, we were in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, in and around Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
I used to live there, so I know.
In Baton Rouge?
Yes, for about a year.
Where did you live in Baton Rouge?
I lived off of Florida Boulevard, or Florida Boulevard, as they say there. They don't have any fat burgers there, though.
No fat burgers.
They don't. They have one Whataburger. Which is good, and they have Sonic Burger, which is okay, even though they messed up my first order there, so they turned me off when I first got there.
Aw, you should have gone to Danville.
I didn't have any burgers.
Did you eat a lot of seafood?
I had seafood. I mean, I'm allergic to shrimp and lobster now, so I can't really eat that, but I ate some fish. But they have some great, nice steak restaurants there. I went to this place called Sullivan's all the time, which was good. And they have jazz in like the front bar area, which was awesome. All the girls, all the waitresses wear black fishnet pantyhose stockings.
fishnet pantyhose.
I don't know. It's like, look, they got a dress code. They got a dress code for guys. Like, you can't come in there with a T-shirt or anything like that. And, you got to wear a collared shirt, nice pants tucked in, all that stuff. But then they let the waitresses walk around with black fishnet stockings on. I'm like, what?
Well, they use those stockings, John, to fish, and then they go in and work.
No, it's like, maybe. Is that what that smell was?
Yeah, that's what they do. They fish with the nets and put the pantyhose on. And it's a two-for-one deal. I'm just kidding.
Sometimes I was just afraid I was going to cut off, one of my fingers when I'm cutting my steak because, you get a pair of legs with some black fish that's walking past you. You're not even looking at what you're doing. You're cutting a steak with a sharp knife, and you're like, what the hell? I also ate at a bunch of Cajun restaurants. I'll eat gumbo and jambalaya that's got the Andouille sausage and the chicken.
Gosh.
Okay.
Andouille, right?
Well, last year, John, you made a film. You directed a film up in Utah. What happened with that? Any news on that? Anything you can say?
I still have my visual effects artist working on some of the cool visual effects that I've got going on that. But the whole reason I did it because it's basically a pitch presentation for a television series that I'm going to be taking out to pitch this year to hopefully, you know, get made as a series on another, you know, on a network, on a cable network, we hope. It's a cable show. So we're still working on that and developing what's called the show Bible and the treatment.
Right.
Which takes time. I'm not really a showrunner or a TV writer, so I've never, you know, it's still a learning process for me, but we're taking it out. We're going to pitch it and hopefully set it up. But it looks great. I've screened it once for the cast and crew and close friends to see what they thought, and everybody seemed to like it a lot. So it was a great learning experience for me, and I'm excited to get back into the director's chair.
Well,
hopefully next year I'm going to direct a feature.
Next year, 2012?
Yeah, next hiatus. Yeah, I'm writing a movie right now that I can hopefully shoot in 2012.
We were looking at your bio, and there's something you're in called Lenito, as yourself.
Is that
true? Something called Lenito we saw on your bio. Were you in something where you appeared in something where you played yourself in some... What was that, Cheryl, we were looking at the other night, last night? It was called Lenito?
Yeah, it had his name in it. It might be a different John Huertas.
Maybe it could be, but it was it's like a Mexican American show. Is that anything to do with you?
Oh, that's not me.
Oh, it's under your bio, and we were wondering what it is during Castle filming. So I wondered. It was just you appear as yourself, and you talk about politics and all sorts of stuff as celebrities, and it has your name listed in like 8 episodes.
Oh, but, in 8 episodes.
Yeah,
oh,
like you talk about your life and what your thoughts are on Mexican American culture, your thoughts, and it has
you know
listed.
That might be it's I think it's more of like a it's a documentative like kind of like news show.
Yes.
I think that's what that is. Yeah, that's what that was. I think they basically. They may have turned that into 8 episodes, but I did that with actually this guy Dennis Fajardo, who's also on the board of directors for Puppies Behind Bars. We just kind of talked about being Latino and being in this business and being in this in this country and just what it's like and you know what we do, how we support each other and how we work.
That's the description. That's the description of it, just what you said. Now, you're doing music. Right now you're sitting in a parking lot probably waiting to go inside to because you majored in music, correct, down at in Texas?
TCU.
TCU?
In musical theater, actually.
Right.
So, you know, for me, acting and singing and dancing, I mean, it all goes together, you know. You know, when you do musical theater, you have to do all three, and so you have to you study dance, you study voice, you sing. And so I've always sang. When I first moved to LA, I got involved in a vocal group back in the day when that was popular. We were signed for a little while, and the album never came out, got shelved, and I kind of got turned off to the whole music industry. And the industry's changed so much now that you can do your own music. You can do what you want to do. I couldn't do what I wanted to do back then necessarily. So now, and Castle's afforded me the opportunity to, have the right amount of free time and the right resources to tap into to do, the type of music that I've wanted to do, that I've always wanted to try out. So, that's what I'm doing. I'm working on my own music project right now, my type of music. And I'm going to release it and see if anybody likes it. If they do, great. If they don't, you're stupid.
What kind of music is it, John?
I call it urban pop. You know, it's the type of music that I like to have fun to. Like, either I like to dance to, I like to, be in bed with somebody to.
Do you write your own music?
Some of the stuff I write, some of it I write, some of it I don't. I like to co-write a lot of stuff, but because being on Castle, I have you know, we work 14 hours a day sometimes,
right.
5 days a week. I barely had time to get in the studio and record, much less write the song. So, you know, there are a lot of songwriters out there that they don't strive to be artists. They don't want to be the artist. They don't want to be on stage. They don't want to be in the studio recording. They want to. They just love writing songs, and they're really good at songwriting. So, for me, I'm a performer. I can get on stage. I can get in front of a camera, and I can perform. And I feel like that's kind of like what I do. That's my gift, and I should give to the people who you know, work so hard at becoming some of the best songwriters in the world. So I, you know, I would rather pay someone, allow them to be a professional songwriter, and let them write songs for me, and I'll record those songs. As long as they're like, you know, I give them any ideas, I tell them what kind of songs that I want and this and that. And so a lot of people write songs for me, and I'm so grateful that there are so many talented songwriters out there, and I'm glad that they want to work with me. And that's kind of how I do it. Some of the songs that I do write, but some, I don't.
Now, on your free time, what are you doing right now besides this video? Are you taking any time to vacation while you're off, or hobbies that you like to do, like running or, you know, sports or anything? Are you doing any kind of hobbies right now?
I'm still training in mixed martial arts, just, you know, basically to keep in shape and keep and stay lethal. I'll be going to France and England. A friend of mine, Stark Sands, who was in Generation Kill with me, is getting married in England. So I'm going out to his wedding. Yeah, I'm going out to his wedding, and we're going to...
I love England.
We're going to enjoy a little bit of France and as well. So I'm doing that right before we get back to Castle. But, you know, right now I'm just working out, training, and I'm working on my music, you know, recording and writing this movie. So, try to break it up and then just chilling and having fun, eating fat burgers.
Brandy in Massachusetts kind of shy, but she asked me this question via Twitter for you. She wanted to know, do you play any instruments, since you like music so much?
I started playing guitar a little bit years ago. I've never completely, I think, learned how to play guitar. But I have two guitars, and I like to pick them up, and I like to, you know, come up with chord progressions and things like that. But I would never get on stage and play guitar because not yet anyway, unless I can find more time to get better. But, you know, I also play Latin percussion. So I grew up playing drums a little bit, and then I got into Latin percussion. Congas, bongos, timbales. I'm pretty good with Latin percussion, so I do have bongos. I used to have timbales and congas, but I spend more time recording than playing music now. But if I'm doing a show one day, I would love to maybe take a set of my timbales and play along with with one of the songs. That might be fun.
Well, a lot of people.
Thanks, Brandy.
There's a whole bunch of people on Twitter right now. Just have him sing for us just a little bit. But Emmanuel down in Brazil, she wants to know if you're ever going to come to Brazil or South America.
I would love to come to Brazil. But, this, you know, with the hectic schedule, it's hard to get down there. What needs to happen is that the fans of Castle in Brazil, they need to get so big and so strong that they need to demand that ABC flies us down there for a promotional tour. So the ABC has to make time in our schedule to get us to Brazil. Because Brazil is, like, their economy is so strong. They're such a fast-growing country economically. And, I mean, I just think Brazil is an amazing country. It's a beautiful country. It's a sexy country. I would love to get down there.
Got to have a murder. Got to get a murder in Brazil, and the Castle cast has to go there and solve it. And
I have a feeling there's plenty of murders in Brazil. I think we just need ABC to try to work it out to where they fly us down there for an amazing promotional tour for Castle.
Karen,
that's how we'll get down there.
Karen Kleinzak, I can't pronounce her name, I'm sorry, Karen. She's from Brazil as well, and she just said, I'm from Brazil, as you know, and we love soccer. So what's John's favorite soccer team?
You know what's funny? First of all, it's going to sound like a setup. And it's going to sound like I'm just trying to brown nose her, but I don't know her. I don't need to know her. I would like to know her if she wants to know me. But I'm saying Brazil just because Brazil, the Brazilian soccer team is one of the most exciting teams to watch play soccer. And it's not just because of the team is amazing, but also because the fans are amazing to watch. The Brazilian fans are also amazing. Next to Brazil, my favorite soccer team is Spain. They have, you know, they have a certain finesse with the way that they play soccer that I just love. Other than that, I mean, those are the only two teams that I really, you know, that I'll really tune in and watch because they're so exciting to watch. And I, you know, I get into soccer once the, you know, the World Cup hits and stuff like that. So,
well, John, do you have any siblings?
Do I have any siblings?
Yeah, that's out of the left field. But do you have any siblings?
Yes, I have a brother and a sister.
You in the middle?
No, I'm the oldest.
You're the oldest. Okay. Well, I'm just reading off the questions that people are asking you. So, we have so many questions to ask you, but it's already into the hour. Do you have time to take – Cheryl, do you have anybody waiting on the phone lines to talk to John before he has to take off?
I got 15 minutes. I'm not recording until 7:30. Okay. I got 15 minutes to prep before I record.
He's got 15 minutes. Anybody out there on the phone lines, Cheryl?
Oh, yes. I have quite a few people lined up.
Okay, well, let them go. Go
okay.
for it.
First up, I have Terry from Pennsylvania. Terry, you still there?
Yes, I am.
Go ahead and ask your question, John.
Hi, John. Real quick, I love you.
Terry?
I love you on the show, Castle. I love Castle. I never miss an episode of it. But I wanted to know your favorite moment in the show, Castle, whether it was behind the scenes having fun with the other actors or whether it was one particular scene or episode that you filmed. What was your favorite?
My favorite moment that I've had on Castle really, I think, was the first season. After the first season, after we wrapped, you know, we were kind of on the bubble as far as knowing whether we were going to get picked up. And I was driving in my car down Abbot Kinney Boulevard in Venice, California. And Andrew Marlowe, the creator, called me. My cell phone rang. I see his name on the phone. And at that point, you know, you don't know if it's going to be good luck or bad luck. And usually when you get picked up, your manager, or agent, or your lawyer, they're the people who call you. So Andrew Marlowe called me and told me that we were picked up for a second season. And I think my heart swelled up with blood. And I thought my chest was going to explode. And so I had to roll down my window. And in the middle of Venice, California, I roared like a lion. At the top of my lungs. It's just like a, yeah, that we got picked up. I was so excited. So that is my favorite moment that has to do with the show. On screen, I think it was the season finale when Seamus and I, when we come out of the bar and right that moment when we find out the captain has been betraying us. I think that it just built up perfectly the way it was shot, the way it was cut. I think it built up perfectly to the moment when, you know, we finally fought and everything, and the frustration and how it came out of both of us. I think that was my favorite moment that we filmed. My favorite moment that has to do with the show is when I'm roaring at people on the street. People ducked. People got on the ground. They thought they didn't know what was going on.
Nice. Thank you. Thank you for taking the time to answer my question.
Thank you, Terry. I love you too, Terry.
And next up we have Shivana from New York City. Shivana, you are on Stana Talk Radio. What's your question for John? Shivana
got scared and dumped.
Okay, I'll put her back up.
Shivana, did you hear my roar? Shivana must have heard my roar. Can I get a little bit of a roar?
Her.
I'm sorry,
okay.
Shivana. That was me. I wasn't a real lion.
Okay, next up we have Margaret from Massachusetts. Margaret, are you there?
Margaret.
John, you're scaring
Margaret,
everybody.
Margaret, are you there?
Okay.
Margaret, can I call you Maggie? Margaret, where are you?
Well, let's definitely go to Shelley from Florida. Shelley, go ahead. What's your question for John? Or Kelly. Kelly from, I'm sorry, I'm messing myself up because I skipped over a few people. Kelly from Missouri.
Hey, are you there?
Yes, we're here. Go ahead.
Kelly.
Okay, good.
Hey, John.
My question for you is, those slaps that you guys that Seamus put on Twitter of you slapping Nathan, are those really that hard on him or are they just kind of faked?
I don't just slap for giggles. I you know, I put everything I got into a slap. You can ask Nathan. He'll tell you. You get a chance to ask Nathan, ask him how hard I slap. No little girl slaps like Nathan does. I put everything into it.
Those are called sissy boy slaps.
Oh yeah, Nathan's got hands. Nathan's hands are softer than a kitten's back. They're like, I don't think he's done. I don't think he's ever done any.
No yard work.
Like, nothing like that.
No. It's gonna get you, John.
Did that answer your question, Kelly?
Yes, that did. And the other,
yeah.
I've got another one, and I was curious about the equestrian dressage that you've done.
The dressage, did you like that?
Yeah, the dressage. I haven't actually seen, I've never actually seen a video. I just heard that you've done it, and I know that where I live, there's an equestrian center that's close by, and it's always been something that I've been curious about. No, I've never ridden before.
But if I come there to ride at that equestrian center, I'll be damned if you're not going to get on a horse with me.
Challenging you.
Get on a horse.
You will get on a horse right beside me.
Sorry.
Yeah,
Florida.
I love riding. I ride
that's
horses. I've been riding since I've been riding since I was a kid. Dressage is something that's a little new to me. I've been riding Western. I've done some English back in the day, so I got back into that type of riding. Dressage is just, it's a little more technical. It's a little more, the Andalusian horse is just an amazingly graceful horse. So, you know, it's like you have to ride dressage on this horse. It just doesn't feel right. And it's fun. It's amazing. And I like the spectacle of it, you know, putting the costume on and all this stuff. And you know, I'll probably continue to do dressage, but I am more of a Western rider. So, you know, you might see me more in a cowboy hat than some riding pants and boots.
Well, you should post some Twitter pics of that.
Yes, Twitter.
There were a bunch of them out there. Somebody was filming and or whatever, and there were a bunch of pictures. There was actually a video on Twitter of me riding in that show.
And then there was a video. Then there was a picture of you and Nathan on horseback. I remember that too.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Well, we're gonna
all
go.
Right.
We're going
to
go try.
The next. Thank you,
yes.
Kelly.
Yes, thanks, Kelly.
Oh, you're welcome.
Bye.
Thank you, Kelly.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Margaret, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, sorry. I kind of messed up earlier. That was my fault. Go ahead and ask your question. Margaret's from Massachusetts, John.
Hey,
hi,
Margaret.
John,
can I call you Maggie?
I love you on cast. What?
He wants to call you Maggie.
Yeah, that's fine.
Hey, Maggie, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
Good.
My question was, I'm thinking about going into acting, and I wanted to know if you had any advice.
How old are you, Maggie?
What?
Never ask a girl her age, John.
Come on. That's still 20th century?
No. How old are you? He wants to know how old you are.
I'm 15.
15?
So you're in high school. Are you in your drama program at school?
I am.
There you go. That would be my first bit of advice is you know, starting early. It's just like I kind of treated acting. I kind of look at it like sports. So if I were playing football, I think working in television and or film is like playing in the Super Bowl. And being a working actor and working all the time and having a career is like playing in the Super Bowl. It's the big time. It's the biggest game of your life. So in order to get to the Super Bowl, most NFL players, most football players played little league football, which means they started playing football when they were 10 years old, and they never stopped playing football, and they never stopped practicing, and they never stopped, you know, honing their craft and getting better and better at what they do until they got into the Super Bowl. And they still don't quit. They still keep training and working hard. So that would be my advice, is to always train and work hard and try to get better and better. Never think that you're as good as you're going to get, because you can always get better. You can always learn. So always train and always work out and always, you know, be in as many plays as you can, no matter what role, what size role, whatever you get. Just keep working, keep just auditioning for everything. And then once you get to the level, like, you know, college is college. You got to go study theater, hopefully. And then once you're finished with your college degree, then you got to make a decision. Do I move to Los Angeles? Do I move to New York? My advice to any actor who wants to get into TV and film, move to L.A. Anybody who wants to get into professional theater, move to New York. There's no real professional theater in L.A. It's kind of hard in L.A. It's a very small pool in L.A. In New York, it's an even smaller pool for television and film. It's really hard to get into TV and film out of New York. But if you go do something amazing on stage in New York in a Broadway show or something like that, most likely every TV network and major motion picture studio will actually try to, you know, groom you for TV and film. They'll want to discover you. They'll want to be the studio or the network that discovered this actor's ability for TV and film that just came out of this amazing Broadway show and nominated for a Tony. So, you know, keep training, keep working, stay in every drama and theater program that you can. Because
I will. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Excellent advice. And even try the London Theater. They have an awesome theater over there.
Okay, next up, I'll try Christina again.
You're welcome. See you later.
That was Maggie from somewhere. I can't remember where Maggie. Do you have Pebble Castle fan down in Florida?
She was there and then she left. I'll see if she comes back. This is Christina in Chicago. Christina, go ahead and ask your question of John.
Hey, was that me?
Yes.
Oh, sorry. Okay. My sister is beating the crap out of me right now because I'm on the phone with you, John. So please. Okay, my question is.
What is it?
How many pillows do you sleep with at night?
Pillows.
How many pillows do I sleep with at night?
Yes. Oh, all right, any time of the day, because you may not just, like, sleep at night. You can sleep during the day.
That's a good point, Christina. That is a good point.
good night.
You basically just want to know how many pillows I sleep with when I'm in my bed sleeping. That's what you want to know.
Or it could be, you know, a hotel bed, you know, as long as you're in a bed with pillows. How many pillows do you need to actually fall asleep?
Why do you need to know that? That's my question of you.
Well, I have three pillows and a really, like, a 4 feet long, you know, that body pillow thing?
Yes.
So I have four total, and that's just for me.
Okay.
What do you have, John?
So.
Okay, here's what I got going on. First of all, if I go to a hotel, I don't have any control on how many pillows they're going to put in the room. I have to call them and ask them for more pillows or whatever. But in my house, I will tell you that for me, I don't need any pillows to fall asleep. But what I usually sleep with is, I usually have two pillows that I'm, you know, somewhere on or something like that. A lot of times I actually take one pillow and I kind of ball it up and put my head on it. And I sleep like that.
Okay.
Well,
thank you for calling. John, do you remember your first screen kiss on air? Was it Sabrina?
No, I think it was Moesha, actually.
Moesha, okay. I was thinking Sabrina, the Teenage Witch.
Well, next we have...
It was Moesha.
Okay.
Okay, next we have Megan from Ontario. Megan, go ahead and ask your question of John.
Okay, hi.
Hi, Megan. How are you, Megan?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
I'm good. It's been a long time. I haven't seen you in a long time.
It's been years. It's been his whole life.
First off, I absolutely love you. I think you're, like, really cool. And my question is, what's your relationship with, like, each of the cast, like Sana and Nathan and Seamus and Molly and Tamala? Like, how close are you with them, each of them?
I mean, I think they're each one of them represents a different unit of my family, a different member of my family, really. I guess Seamus is like the smart little brother who just has so many useless facts in his brain that if I have a question about anything, I can ask Seamus and he'll most likely has the answer. If he doesn't have it, he'll figure it out in less than 3 minutes, and he'll get me the answers.
Oh, wow.
Very valuable.
Yeah, it's
a valuable. What about
Stana?
Stana is like, I would say Stana is like a, okay, this isn't Beckett, this is Stana John. Stana is like the, she's like the girl who lives down the street.
The girl
like,
next door.
She's like one of the, she's like, we're like, you know, there's a group of kids, we're all friends, and she lives down the street. She's one of the friends. We're friends. We've been friends for a long time, you know, but she's the girl who lives down the street, so there's always...
That's a good analogy.
You know, there's always...
What about with Nathan?
Nathan is the brother, the older brother who is just a big nerd. Who
big nerd.
If we have a video game console in the house, I'm not going to get to play it.
Nathan hogs it.
Nathan hogs the. That's who Nathan is. He's like the big nerd kid who like, you know, all the gadgets, all the toys and stuff. He'll want to hoard them and have them all.
What about Ruben?
If he sees that you really want the same thing, he'll get it for you. So if I want a video game console, he'll go buy me one. He's like that older brother. He's the one who'll say, you want, look, this is my Xbox 360, but if you want one, here's one. I'll give you one.
Okay, we have two more real quick questions. One's from Amy in California. Amy, go ahead and ask John your question.
Oh, I forgot my question.
Oh.
Amy, for God's sake, Amy.
Live on air, you forget your question.
Think of a question. Amy, I'm going to count to three. You better think of a question quick. One, two.
Do you like Flapping Nathan?
Yes. One more question.
Okay, last one real quick. And this
he's got to go.
This is from Shelley in Florida. Go ahead, Shelley. Ask John your question. Wait a minute. I hit the wrong button. Let me put the right button
Shelley,
on here.
Who's that, Nina?
I'm sorry. Shelley, go ahead and ask John your question.
Hi, John. I absolutely love watching the show. And I have to ask if my favorite moment in the entire season 3 is in the very first episode where Ryan's chair rolls past Esposito's. And I have to know if that was intentional and written in or if you just worked it out and it was a very wonderful accident.
I would say that's one of those happy accidents that we kind of worked into the scene.
Ah, I love it.
And we had to shoot that more than once. So, you know, it's something that we ended up working out and making it work, and it's a nice little moment, and it definitely reinforced the kind of relationship that Ryan and Esposito have.
Which is one of my all-time favorite parts of television.
You're a smart girl.
Thank you.
John, I will let you know, we have 50 phone lines for Sana Talk Radio. Every single one of them is filled up, and everybody's hands are raised, except for maybe
50
people. So that's
right,
pretty awesome.
Let's do 5 more minutes, then.
Do 5 more minutes. Can you go for it? Thank you, John. That's sweet. We'll have to have you back next season.
I'm doing it for the fans.
You'll have to come back and do our show, John, and talk to us next year.
Well, here's one from Brenda in Kansas City. Brenda, go ahead and ask your question of John.
Oh, sweet. I did get to it. Thanks, Cheryl. Hi, Pam.
Hi.
Hi, John. How are you doing?
Hi, Brenda. What's up, Brenda?
Good to talk
to you.
I was just wondering, I don't know if you could answer this or not, but first of all, what type of guns or pistols do you guys use on the show?
What type of weapon systems do we use on the show?
Yeah, like what kind of pistols do you guys carry?
Water. No.
The type of handgun that the three of us use as our, you know, primary service weapon is we all three use Glock 9mm Mine's a compact. It's a Glock 23. I think Stani and Sam use Glock 22s. I usually use, when I go to a bigger gun, like an assault rifle, I use an M4 carbine, classical stock, forward handle, you know. I think I usually use an ACOG on there. And I use a shotgun, usually a Remington 870. And that's about
it. A little bit of everything.
Mix it up a little bit.
And a bazooka gun for later.
Why do you want to know? So what do you
think?
why do you want to know what kind of guns you
use? Well, in all honesty, my son is really big into deer hunting.
Oh.
And what I have a Beretta that's a 9mm.
Okay.
Well, I was just curious. I mean, no big deal.
Okay.
If you go hunting with a Beretta 9mm, you aren't going to hit one deer, just to let you know.
You know, that's quite all right.
It'd be a tree branch.
With my son.
You're lucky you'll hit a tree branch, Brenda.
Okay, Shivana called back in.
Brenda, I would love to watch you chasing a deer around the woods with a Beretta 9mm.
Actually, I usually don't use the Beretta to go deer hunting with. I just use it for target practicing, to go target practicing with my son.
Send us a video, Brenda.
Do what?
Send John a video of you chasing deer through the woods.
Actually, I used to go deer hunting, but it wasn't with that by any means.
Brenda,
I didn't
pay
even
to
have
see
one
it.
I used to go deer hunting.
Brenda, listen to me.
What?
I'm going to make you a deal.
Okay.
If you go deer hunting with a Beretta 9mm, I swear to God, and you tweet me on Twitter a video of that, I will come to Missouri and go deer hunting with you.
Do it, Brenda.
With a 308, a 30-06, something like that, a real deer hunting gun. And I don't even hunt, but I will do that. I'll bring my bow. I will go bow hunting with you.
Oh, my brother's bow hunt.
I've got to see you, the 9mm, and a deer in the frame of the video, and you got to be chasing this deer with it. I will personally fly to Missouri, and I will bring my bow, and I will go deer hunting with you, me and you, in our camouflage, in our deer blind.
There you go. And does the deer have to be real?
The deer has to be real. Okay? Is that a deal?
Brenda?
No, you're blaming me.
Okay, go do it.
Okay,
go do
Shivana,
it.
Shivana called back in really quick. Let's see if she's still here. Shivana, are you there?
Hello?
You made it.
Shivana,
this time.
What happened to you?
Hi. Oh, no.
Shivana, we had a date.
With my phone?
John said you had a date.
We had a date, and you flaked on me.
Hi,
Shivana,
John,
from New York City.
I'm from New York.
Yes.
But I just wanted to say that I love you on Castle, and I'm just, like, amazed that I'm actually talking to you right now, so.
Yeah, you don't have a question?
Oh, yeah. my question is, have you ever done musical theater, and would you consider doing it?
I have done musical theater. I love doing musical theater, and when Castle is off the air in, let's say, it'll probably be on for another 5 years. Say I would probably make my move out to New York for, you know, a short period of time to try to do some musical theater in New York. Yes.
Okay, this is really the last question, John, and this is Christina from Ontario, Canada. Christina, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, John. How are you?
What's up? Is this Christina?
Yes, it is.
Hey!
Nothing much. How are you?
I'm chilling. Just talking on the radio.
I just had one question for you. Since you've done 3 seasons of Castle, what has your all-time favorite episode been?
I think it was the season finale this year. Check this out. I've only cried for 3 TV shows in my life. One of them is The Killing. If you guys, you know, if I can promote somebody else's show, my friend Eric Layden, who was in Generation Kill with me. The
Love
Killing
that.
On AMC. In
Cheryl
the pilot,
watches The Killing.
I bawled like a baby in the pilot. I was like, what's going on with me? Why am I not? I did that, so I cried. And then I cried. I just watched The Good Wife the other night. Great show on CBS. I like The Good Wife, man. I love Julianna Margulies. I'm hoping I could do a love scene with her one day.
Here, Julia.
And the only other TV show that's made me cry is Castle season finale.
What
scene? Tears in my eyes.
The captain died?
There were two scenes. Definitely there was some water when the captain died. But I'm just going to say that I had some tears in my eyes. I'm not going to tell you when and where because I can't. I still got to be a little bit mysterious. But the season finale, just to answer your question, Christina.
Thank you.
And my favorite of John was the Double Down.
Thanks, Christina.
If you want to know what my favorite John episode is, where they played they bet each other, Castle and Stana's character against Ryan and Esposito, when they did the bet.
That's my second favorite episode, definitely. Double Down.
Well, John, we thank you so much for joining us. We just can't thank you enough for spending all this time with us tonight and for all the listeners around the world. And we wish you a really happy summer, and we hope that you get to make Comic-Con. And, Cheryl, you will ask him a question, right?
Yes, I'm going to – and I love The Killing. I can't believe somebody else loves that show like I do. Not as much as Castle, though. Castle's my number one, I'm just telling you.
I like The Killing too. It's all right.
Right. Well, thank you so much for joining us. And if you ever want to come back, you know where we are. If you want to promote anything or come back and visit with us next year, we have a lot of questions about your acting we didn't even get to. We just had the phones are overwhelmed. I'm sure when they download this to listen, it will crash the servers again. So we thank you so much for joining us, and wish you all the best.
I got one more thing to say, just really quickly.
Sure.
And this is actually based on a question I saw on Twitter.
Okay.
One thing I got to say about just where I've been, what I'm doing now, the military. I answered that question earlier about how to become an actor and this and that. Someone wanted some advice on how to become a working actor. I didn't quite do it exactly the same way I told her. I kind of did, but I kind of didn't. But I had a little hiccup and I had to I couldn't finish college when I first went to college. I basically had to go into the military. And the military, what's great about the military is that it offers not only a chance for someone to, maybe fulfill a sense of purpose, a sense of duty, but it also it gives people a foundation for initiative, an initiative-based existence, a disciplinary foundation, and it also allows people to get an education that they might not be able to get otherwise, and that's what it allowed for me. It allowed me to go to college. It allowed me to the military, actually, while I was active duty, paid for 75% of any state college or university that I went to, and I went to a couple different ones until I finally graduated. But it definitely paid for my education, and my education was in musical theater. So to answer the question to Ms. Lamb on Twitter, I was in the military and in college at the same time.
That's great, and we thank you for serving our country. It's our freedom is because of guys like you that go out there, and women. My nephew's in Special Forces in Iraq right now for his second tour, and every day you put your life on the line so we can enjoy what we're doing right now, talking on the radio.
In a free America.
Exactly.
Right.
Thank you so much, John. You have a great evening, and we can't wait to hear your music, so let us know, okay?
I will. Thank you very much. I'll let everybody know. It'll be coming out soon, hopefully.
Well, you let us know, and we'll get it out there on the radio and on Twitter and Facebook and MySpace and everywhere. And thank you for joining us.
All right. Take care.
All right, guys.
Good night, John.
Bye.
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 What a